This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Iowa Congressman Steve King, representing the Hawkeye State's 5th Congressional District. We want to get his thoughts on the change in the political scene here in Washington over the last few days and how it affects a number of critical issues. And Congressman, it's always good to have you with us.
It's good to be back. I always enjoy doing your program, Greg.
Thank you, sir. Well, I know that you were very busy in the days leading up to the special election in Massachusetts, campaigning for Scott Brown up there. What did you notice as you traveled around what is typically a safe Democratic state?
Well, my real impression after 3 days, the cumulative effect was I met a lot of good people, Greg. And the delegation, the Massachusetts delegation of the people that I deal with, 10 of them all together, 2 senators and 8 House members, all Democrats. And, you know, we clash once in a while. Sometimes it's pretty intense. And when I went through those call centers for Scott Brown, and I went in there, and the people were just unbelievably welcoming. They were glad to see me. I kind of felt like an intruder when I stepped in the door, and I felt like family when I left. They could have just as well been my neighbors and at my church picnic. They care a lot about this country, and I would have said that Massachusetts was the least probable place for us to be able to look to get relief from this socialized medicine plan that's been driven so hard by the president, Nancy Pelosi, and Harry Reid. But it came from Massachusetts, not very far from Plymouth Rock, Lexington, or the original Tea Party in the harbor.
Congressman, on Friday, the president said he believed the reason the health care plan was unpopular is because the process has taken too long and because the special interests against the plan have misinformed the American people. What do you think the lesson is from Massachusetts, and do you think the president's learned it?
I don't think he learned. I think what happened, and this is the thing that he misses, and I know David Axelrod has spoken about it since then, he misses it that it isn't that the message has been twisted. I mean, he's been accusing, and Axelrod clearly did, of the propaganda of the other interests. I mean, that's the thing that you accuse communists of, and, you know, they're the ones jerking ass in that direction, and the people that are opposing this bill are the ones that are pulling us back towards the Constitution, back towards our liberty. And as people found out what was in the bill, it wasn't that they didn't know when they're dealing behind the scenes, but as information leaked out, the level of rejection and, in fact, repulsion by the blatant political bribes and kickbacks, as well as the policy, is the highest as I know of, at least in my lifetime. And that's what people rejected. They didn't like the policies, they didn't like the government takeover, and they surely didn't like the backroom deals, bribes, and kickbacks. And I think another piece of this, Greg, is that, you know, this is about the nationalization of a person's body. I mean, they nationalized 8 huge entities. We've talked about that before, including our car companies. And Americans saw that happen. They are really uneasy at watching us race down that path. But when the federal government steps up and says, now we're going to manage your body, we're going to take it over, we're going to tell you what you have to buy for insurance, we're going to extract it out of your pocket whether you like it or not, and then we're going to manage your health from Washington, D.C., there's nothing more private than your own body and your own health. By the way, a lot of the same people that are saying that that a woman's body is hers and no one should tell her what to do with her body, that's the same people saying to us, the government should tell you what to do with your body, in fact, everybody's body in the entire United States of America.
Well, Democrats also say that there's clearly a populist streak in this country, and now the president needs to get ahead of that curve. Once again, he's going after the banks, saying they can't be involved in hedge funds anymore, they can't consolidate. What impact, if any, do you think these proposed changes will have on the job creation effort in this country?
I think on balance they're going to be harmful. When you start heaping more and more regulations on the banks, I mean, the bank's lending capacity is what allows small business to start and grow. And I'm one who, I started a construction company in 1975. I had a negative net worth of $5,000. And so I went out and bought an old bulldozer and welded on it for 2 weeks before I could put it to work. That's how I got started, because a banker had enough confidence in me to loan me 100% to buy that old rattletrap machine because he thought I would make it work. And, you know, if you don't have bankers in the business to do that, and if you have the government telling them when to make the loans and how, and punishing those that are actually out there doing it, I think that it goes backwards on us. But it looks to me like the president's looking for somebody else to blame. He didn't really wait more than 24 or 36 hours to pivot off of the Scott Brown election and start start going after the bankers. And let's just challenge the president and Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and liberal Democrats. If you're really serious about reform, let's go after the trial lawyers. Let's take that $203 billion a year out of the healthcare industry that's going either into the pockets of the trial lawyers or the cost of litigation or the cost of premiums or defensive medicine. It's about 8.5% of our overall healthcare that we're delivering, and that's one of the low numbers. Many other numbers are higher than that. Democrats really aren't serious. The president isn't serious about reform, or they would take at least the first penny out of the pockets of the trial lawyers instead of the bankers.
Couple minutes left here, Congressman, and I want to get your thoughts on a couple of hot-button and timely social issues. I know on Friday you took part in the March for Life, 37 years since Roe v. Wade, the pro-life march across the Washington Mall to the Supreme Court. What did you notice in that gathering?
More people keep building up there year by year, and there are more younger people year by year. The cross-section of the crowd, I wish I had snapshots of it going back from the beginning. This is the largest, most sustained movement but that comes to Washington, D.C. to do this kind of a March for Life and demonstration. They do it every year. And when I meet with young people, I am exhilarated at the quality of people that show up in Washington. Hand them the gavels in 20 or 25 years. America will be just fine.
A minute ago, Congressman, you may have some pro-choice people listening to this who say a minute ago you talked about the Obama health care plan was a bad idea because the very same people who say that you shouldn't tell a woman what to do with her body is now telling all of us what to do with our body through health care mandates if they were to get that through. They may turn that around and ask you then, so why, if you shouldn't tell women what to do, should you be pro-life?
My deeply held conviction is that human life is sacred in all of its forms. And if you believe that, and a very high end of the 90th percentile of Americans do believe that, then you really have to ask another question then, and that is, at what instant does life begin? I can't believe it begins exactly at the instant that that baby can fill its lungs full of air and cry and scream out. I believe it begins at the instant of conception, and I'll protect it along that line. And I want to help mothers, and I want to encourage adoption, and I want to nurture people. But it is we have to come to a conclusion on when life begins. The president said it was beyond his pay scale until he became president, and then he apparently got a raise and decided he was going to issue an executive order that accelerated abortions in America. And everybody knows they're wrong. It's how do we deal with this in a humane way? And I'm happy to sit down and talk pro-choice people, but there's not a dichotomy on the part of a person's privacy. It's the matter that a woman is blessed with the ability to have a child, and when she makes a decision on her activities and becomes pregnant, that's when the decision is made. It shouldn't be made after that.
Last question, Congressman. You and I have talked about this before, both in your own state and now here in Washington, and that's the D.C. City Council approving gay marriage. Congress has a limited window to review that and potentially overturn that. Are you hearing anything along the lines of Congress getting ready to do that?
Well, there are a lot of us that will continue to try to get that done. We know that we have to figure out a way over, around, or through Nancy Pelosi to get that done. And, it's kind of surprising that a lady that is fostered herself the way she has, well, I guess she's from San Francisco, so that answers it. But, the D.C. Council has usurped the rights of the people in the District of Columbia who, by their statute and their framework, guarantees them the ability to have a referendum on this. I really want the people in D.C. to have the referendum, and I would be also very happy just to vote to overturn that decision of the D.C. Council. I'll take it either way, the voice of the people or the voice of the Congress, but not the voice of the D.C. Council, because they refuse to let the voice of the people be heard.
Congressman, a lot going on right now. As always, sir, a great pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for your time.
It's mine. Thank you very much, Greg.
Iowa Congressman Steve King represents the Hawkeye State's 5th Congressional District. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.